You are listening to the Green Lantern Corecast, episode number 123. This episode, Guardian Knife Fight.
Green Lantern Corecast. I'm, of course, your host, Frank Mateo, and joining me today, my esteemed colleagues all across the rainbow board. Here comes Brandon, the Red Speedster himself, able to be quick and precise like nobody's business. How are you doing, Brandon?
I'm doing well, Frank.
Nice. Carlton, of course, here, you know, to deliver us small tidbits of fascinating asides and whatnots and knickknacks. How are you doing, Carlton?
I live for Trivial Pursuit.
Nice. And of course, we also have Kuhan here, you know, slightly in the back, sort of away, sort of small and insignificant in the corner, but he is in our hearts. How you doing?
Hey guys, how's it going?
Nice. And of course, we also have Andrew, the creator of the Green Lantern message boards, here with us today. How you doing, Andrew?
Hey, pretty good, man. What's up?
Nice. Of course, we're gonna have a special show, especially that the zero issues and the 1 year anniversary of pretty much the new relaunch of the New 52 finally came out, and we've been blessed to read them now here together in unison. So we have a Green Lantern Annual, the Green Lantern Annual number one, and we also have Green Lantern number zero. So technically, we also get to show and to speak about the new Green Lantern, finally Simon Bass. Who finally, you know, emerged from obscurity into the main Green Lantern streams. But before that, do we have any news, Brandon?
Oh, Jesus. no.
All right. You see,
no news is good news.
No news is good news. So that just means we're going to get you more of what you want. We're going to jump right into it, into the Green Lantern Annual number one, where we get to see, of course, a small little aside and snippet of Hal Jordan buried in a box.
Huh. In a box.
I wonder where Geoff Johns got that idea.
Must be an inside joke. Like, it's got to be. It's gotta
Clearly,
be.
It's beyond our comprehension as to how the mind of Geoff Johns works here, that none of us could have ever pictured Hal Jordan buried underground in whatever fashion. I mean, who would have came up with that idea? But
I don't understand. Is this a buried reference or a Kill Bill reference? I don't get the joke.
It's a Ryan Reynolds' Hal Jordan reference, and
right, the buried. Okay,
buried.
Right.
Yeah,
just
right.
Check.
It's a buried.
You see, Ryan Reynolds did a film called Buried, in which he was buried in a box, and he also played Hal Jordan.
Correlation, people. Correlation.
There it is.
So
everybody's okay. Not smart as Frank, so I'm just clearing that up.
So again, this story itself starts off, and of course it's beautifully drawn by Ethan Van Sciver. The story itself starts off with the Guardians of the Galaxy, or the Universe.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Guardians of the Galaxy, the Guardians of the Universe, the Smurf Brigade.
One of them things.
You know,
Rocket Raccoon is there.
Floating around nothing else, nothing that's re-estating and telling us the overall purpose of their being there and the overall purpose of the story of the Green Lantern mythos, such as reinserting and retelling us the mythos of the Manhunter robots destroying, you know, sectors, emotions, yada, 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 and, of course, how they failed in, you know, creating order out of chaos with the Green Lantern Corps, and pretty much laying in the fact that they're now starting the first, you know, the third army. And we also get to see more Black Hand, more Hal Jordan being buried underground and breaking out real easy, mind you, and a poorly written Sinestro tombstone. We also get to see a lot more, you know, talks about, you know, like Hal Jordan's father and stuff. Of course, no one will leave Martin Jordan dead and buried, like, long enough for us to, like, you know, have any actual emotional impact with this guy. He's normally always brought up at least every other 2 seconds in Hal Jordan's storylines.
What were his last words, Hal? Who fucking gives a shit?
I don't
fuck out of here with that.
But after a little bit on Earth and Hal Jordan, you know, neglecting wanting to see his father again, we're thrown back into space where the Guardians are now breaking open the giant space fridge of the Guardians.
And inside, Alex DeWitt.
It would be funny if it was, but it's actually Papa Smurf. I'm not even joking here. They actually have small blue other Guardians inside of the little space fridge. One with a giant beard, and I could swear to you, all of these guys look like the Smurf guy. They have a grumpy Smurf on the right, the Papa Smurf in the middle. They have Gadget Smurf onto his left. They have one female, which has to be Smurfette. I'm sorry.
Might be intentional. I mean, Ethan Van Sciver has a pretty good sense of humor.
If it was, bravo, I applaud that. If it actually was meant to actually be an inside joke that these guys are supposed to
be. It might be.
And, of course, you get the Guardians. You get, you know, the whole them having to fight one another because they're, again, Maltesians, as they're, you know, called. The Maltesian race has to fight each other in a giant wicked battle to, like, you know, safeguard the first lantern. And back on Earth, Black Hand doing this whole thing about can't bring back Martin Jordan because he's just way too stubborn and willful to come back from the dead. And a lot of, you know, back and forth fighting, which is, again, pretty funny, seeing that, you know, Black Hand can literally shoot Jordan to death if he wanted to, but he doesn't. Sinestro coming back, something about a handshake, and they get their powers back in, like, you know, in Wonder Twin power fashion, as Kuhan.
Very convenient. Like, Wonder Twin powers activate form of a Green Lantern battery.
I just love that they introduce, like, the obvious Green Guardian replacements in the same arc that are gonna kill the current ones.
The foreshadowing, not really.
Minus Ganthet.
Shadowing.
The funniest thing about this issue still is the fact that as the Guardians and the Maltesians are fighting each other with their amazing, you know, light show powers, they end up evolving into a knife fight.
You don't bring Green Lantern Ring to a knife fight.
You don't bring knives to an energy battle. But apparently if you do, someone's going to die.
If you do, then I guess you win. So the moral is, kids, if there's a gunfight, then bring a knife.
The funniest thing about this, the whole little situation where one of the Guardians kills one of the Maltesians with an energy blade and outright murders one of their, you know, brothers in arms.
It was Papa Smurf, wasn't it?
No, yeah. I think it was Grouchy. It was Grouchy Smurf that gets killed.
I thought it was Papa Smurf.
Not Grouchy. No.
Papa gets killed.
Papa got stabbed in the neck.
It was Papa Smurf. He just lost his hood. Lost his hat in mid-combat. But apparently they bring back one of the old little tidbits that we gained during Rebirth and stuff like that, where once you kill a Guardian, they explode. You know, they explode in energy. Because, you know, since then, quite a few Guardians have died, and they've yet to explode in energy.
Yeah, and they used it as a way to explain, what did they say? Like, every time a Guardian dies, they explode, and that creates a rip between our dimension and Necron's dimension of death is what they originally had, I thought.
Oh, I guess they don't count as Guardians enough.
Well, no, they bring it back here. The thing is, since then, Guardians, you know, certain Guardians have been, you know, getting thrown, they've been getting axed, and yet they have yet to blow up again. They've just fall down and bleed, you know, like yellow blood or something.
And they've danced around it. I mean, like, there's been Guardians that have been, like, slowly disemboweled or whatever, but not, like, outright killed. I mean, there was the one that sacrificed himself in Sinestro Corps War. That should have done, like, a hole in something, you know, but...
Maybe it's only if they're murdered for some reason.
Certain rules.
I'm pretty sure they were murdered.
No, because that one sacrificed himself. The rest of them just sort of... died slow and painful deaths. It's like if they're like killed really quickly,
it could be like the Highlander thing. Like if you have the shock of a violent death, then you become an immortal. If you're a pre-immortal, but if you don't, if you get poisoned or something, then you don't become an immortal. Maybe it's like that.
Yeah, sure.
Whatever.
Must be it.
Asgardian,
that's exactly it.
He breaks through the containment, and we see the first lantern, which is, of course, a giant lantern in multicolored hue, and some dude standing in front of it, like standing inside of it. Of course, we're not, you know, we can't see who it is. We have no idea who the mysterious figure inside of it is. We can only assume it's that guy from Smurfs.
Appaliapsa is what it is.
No, it's Gargamel. It's Gargamel. That's what Gargamel.
It's Dan Castellaneta.
It's time traveling Sinestro or time traveling Hal or both or something.
Time traveling Kyle.
So outside of that, we get back to
time traveling Baz.
The Guardians apparently save Black Hand, supercharge Black Hand, and make him a force for them. But in also doing so, the Black Hand consumes Hal and Sinestro in this giant, you know, vortex of evil light. And the only way that they try to break free from this grasp is that they try to join their rings together, as the rings themselves continuously start saying that they're dead. East or whatever, because they're so close to the verge of death. I have no idea what the hell is going on. But as they fuse their rings together and they reintegrate, it errors. It errors out.
Damn you, Windows!
As it errors out, it explodes and then flies off to find the closest sentient life form to replace the Green Lantern of the Sector, which is, again, we'll get to that in a second. But Hal Jordan and Sinestro are nowhere to be seen. Apparently they have been, you know, killed in the wake of the giant explosion and Black Hand's giant black hole of death thing. And the Guardians, of course, are all talking about the First Lantern, something about his power, and we see more, you know, most of what's going on with the other Green Lanterns, such as Kyle and Guy. But we also get a small taste of what the Third Army is, what they are, and how they're coming to be. The Guardians take the power from the First Lantern, infuse that power with their own body, and create a life form, a alien embryo sort of thing that eventually mutates into a fully formed humanoid creature, devoid of eyes. Completely blue and has like sort of a, you know, Green Lantern shaped hole thing in his chest, and its first act is it kills a cop, and makes it into one of itself. So apparently, the Third Army is a fast spreading bacteria alien creature thing that's going to reshape everything into itself.
Did anyone else notice that the artist on that last little bit, the epilogue or whatever, what have you, the coda, it really looks like they deliberately really tried to make that cop look like Ethan Van Sciver. like, obviously. Like, not even any doubt to it.
Subtlety.
Well, the cop's name is, is the cop supposed to be Sciver?
Yeah. That was a little nod from Pete Woods.
I missed the name then. Maybe it was even more overt than I thought.
So that's the Third Army. The Third Army is a rapidly blue creature that spreads. That's going to spread itself out amongst the living sentient life forms and take away their free will until they all are uniform.
I know. Wish that Ethan gone with it and like started posting on his like Facebook and Twitter, like changed his avatar to the Third Army and like started posting as a Third Army, like, we will take over all of your souls.
You know who I thought when I first saw the art of that three cover spread, I thought that the Third Army was the Keepers. That's what I was thinking for the longest time. Like, oh, it's the Keepers from the GLC arc, but I guess not.
The Keepers?
Yeah,
technically that's true.
Pretty much exactly.
Andrew, saying that what do you think about, you know, this whole thing? What do you see yourself feeling about the Third Army in this story?
Well, all I can comment about right now is the annual, and all I would say is that it's one of the most beautifully drawn, horribly written comics I've read in like years. I mean, I don't know much more to say about that than that. It's just it's horrifyingly amateurish. I compare it to like the Sinestro Corps special, which was like the pinnacle of, I would say, Jeff and Ethan both, but It's just everything that was minus a halfway decent script. It's just every little bit we've seen in like every storyline since then, since Sinestro Corps War, is like recycled in different form here, only twice as shitty and half as original. It's,
so he needs to retire.
Yeah, needs to go away like now. The little lines on the shoulders and stuff, but he's deliberately adapting that style to his own.
True. Yeah, I was wondering how Ethan was going to pull off this, because again, he himself was the one who reintroduced Hal Jordan's costume,
yeah.
Rebirth, and then he has to draw a new rendition of the same costume, just with some lines added to it. It sort of takes it away. It's like seeing him draw it now, it sort of takes that look away from it.
Yeah. He still sneaks in what do you want to call it? The energy projection of the symbol around the...
Oh, yeah.
That nobody else does.
Yeah, that was lost. Yeah, you know, since it's like, oh, man, remember, they're like badges. They shine on. The badges will shine on, but no one does them anymore.
Ooh, is Ethan... I don't have it in front of me. Did Ethan still do the diagonal lines on the boots and gloves that nobody else wants to do?
I'm not entirely sure.
Notice these things.
Oh, they're there. They're there. Actually, there, yeah. They're still there. No one actually wants to draw them, but he keeps them. Brandon, what'd you think of the issue?
I thought it was okay. I thought it presented a lot of interesting ideas, like the Chamber of Shadows, the little vortex that the Guardians went into, the fact that they were smart enough, at least at one point, to, you know, separate themselves, to control this first lantern and to govern the universe. I think that's a good idea. It's plausible for what we thought the Guardians were, at least way back when, before they went all drastically evil. I think that's interesting. I think the first lantern in general is really interesting. I think a lot of people, both on the internet, at thegreenlanterncorps.com, are all saying it's got to be Hal and Sinestro hybrid, or maybe even Kyle. And a lot of people are debating that. But I think the fact that, yeah, we care. And what?
I think it's Sinestro.
I'm one of the people who think it's got to be some mixture of Hal and Sinestro, just because they don't show any hair. So I'm
composite Sinestro.
Yeah,
well,
yeah,
they can't show any hair because that would give it away. But it probably finally goes back to the original prophecy about Sinestro. One day will once again be the greatest Green Lantern, which would harken back to now he already was technically. But
and Hal Jordan's the greatest Black Lantern, so.
Well, there's tons of interesting bits here that I think like could have been done a lot better, but you know, it provided some solid entertainment. I think the scene where Hal and Sinestro quote unquote die, I thought that was delivered pretty well. The suspense was there for me. I think the problem with this annual is a problem I have with the monthly comic, and it's always a quick read, and it makes you feel like there's very little substance there. Going back to the Chamber of Shadows for a bit, I think seeing that giant GL logo on that big old block of tomb, it's just like, it's less so much about the Green Lantern Corps, and it's more about these prophecies that Johns is beating us over the head with. And I think that, you know, I hate to say it, but it literally opens a book for tons of new story ideas. And I don't know, I think I like this issue because of the potential it gives, not so much for what actually happened in it. And I think it sets up for the Third Army well. They obviously aren't that big of a threat or any innovative threat that we haven't seen before as comic readers, but I don't know. I think the Green Lantern Corps are going to have their butts kicked just like they did when they were fighting each other in the last crossover. So I don't know. I'm interested, and then I'm, same old, same old.
Did anyone else read the Geoff Johns interview where he said that, what did he say? He said the Third Army, it won't be an event. It's actually, it's a prologue for the next event. And it's like,
yeah, I recall. I remember.
I commented on the board. I said, "Well, okay, well, how is that any different from any event Geoff Johns has ever written ever?"
I thought they were all prologues.
Yeah,
like everything's a prologue leading to another prologue, leading into another event that will more than likely be a prologue.
He's doing a trilogy of prologues to a trilogy of trilogies.
And it's like the man is incapable of doing any kind of event without, like, A, like, there being some kind of, like, huge, like, everything you know about Green Lantern history is wrong, and I'm going to show you how...
It's going to get turned on its head.
The Guardians have another secret room somewhere that no one has ever seen ever and full of, you know, mysterious figures or objects.
Like, John's put out, like, four solid years of good Green Lantern comics. Like, four solid years of good Green Lantern comics. And then it was like, around Rage of the Red Lanterns, where it was just sort of like... And now it's just
done, but
that's a good run. Like, that's a solid run up from Rebirth to like a little bit past Sinestro Corps. That's a solid run, and then he kept it going.
Just kept going, just kept going. But yeah, Golden, what do you think of this issue? Kumo.
Yeah.
You want anything to add to the annual itself? What do you thought about it?
Yeah, well, I thought it was. I mean. There was, I like the Guardian knife fight, I guess, but yeah, it just seems like it's a lot of just like Michael Bay action movie stuff. It's just like, oh, there's action and fighting and high stakes and Wonder Twins powers. Let's fight. And now Black Hand is doing things, and now they're gonna die, but maybe not. What's gonna happen? Check out my next event. So yeah, it's just a lot of that, and I don't. It's just the art was great. There were a few points where I think the first page just sort of threw me off. But maybe it's just because I was expecting Mankey and saw Van Sciver, and I'm like, oh, that's right, Ethan drew this issue. But like after that, and it might also be like the coloring on the Guardians in that page or something like that. But like after that, it was all good work from Ethan, obviously. So it just seems like a lot of pandering to people who have decided that they've decided that Geoff Johns is good because it was cool to think Geoff Johns was good, and they haven't realized that he's not doing good work anymore. At least that seems like the culture that I keep hearing is just a lot of, you know, like, oh, this Geoff story is great. And it's like, yeah, but it wasn't really.
Can I disagree with everyone?
Yes, go, Brad, please.
I wasn't that big of a fan of Ethan's work here. Maybe I was a bit spoiled.
There were points. There were points that I noticed.
But this just seemed like average art, you know? I think it's detailed in some aspects, but I think it might just be too many panels for Ethan. I don't think he was quite ready for that cinematic style that Geoff has adapted since the Blackest Night days with Ivan Reis. But I don't know. I didn't find anything great about this issue when it came to the art. It was, you know, it was okay. You know, I found nothing impressive about it. And it's not bad at all, but it's just, you know, I take, you know, the last couple issues of Doug's work over this. You know, the Indigo Tribe arc looked a lot prettier than this, even with its gruff style.
There's also the inking is a thing, which was nice.
Yeah, Golden, everybody.
Well, I like the art, first off. I just want to say that. I mean, I've always enjoyed Ethan Skyver's art. I mean, he was the artist on the first Green Lantern comic that I read, so that means something.
No, but, it doesn't.
Shut up.
No, it's like it actually doesn't. Like, just because he was doesn't mean Jim.
Nobody Lee asked you. Hippie.
Jim Lee was the artist on the first Green Lantern comic I read. Doesn't make him good.
Shut up. No one's talking about Jim Lee. Anyway,
eloquent as always.
Speaking on the issue itself, I mean, there are some interesting little hints here and there, and nods about stuff that could develop in interesting stories, but really a lot of it was just set up. Oh, and, you know, Hal Jordan's sister may or may not have died, you know, little things like that. But overall, I mean, there was some interesting stuff, but that's all I can say is it's set up. It's not an actual story, really. Just a little, mostly set up, a little bit of story.
How is that any different from what Geoff John normally does?
I didn't say it was different. I was just saying what it was.
It also it doesn't seem like an annual by any means.
It seems like a monthly.
What were you saying, Brandon?
What do you expect from a monthly comment? I mean, from an annual comment?
Something more, like a thing. Like this just this just seemed like it was just another monthly issue. Like I expect something special by the fact that it's called an annual, not just Green Lantern number 12 or number 13 or whatever.
The two main characters died.
But it didn't feel special enough to belong in an annual by itself. Because annuals just are like little special stories that are in their own little world with like special guest writers and like stories from like days in the past.
Artists like Ethan Van Sciver?
I was more referring to something not written by Geoff Johns.
Something else, like something in the story. It was a special artist. The main character's dying, like that I could see happening in Green Lantern number 12. Like it doesn't seem like something special because we're not sure how dead they are to begin with. Kyle Rayner died in Green Lantern Corps and he came back the next issue. It's death, but it's death in comics, which doesn't mean anything. So it's not really anything because we know they're going to come back. So it's not like it actually means anything unless their death is used. Like, I guess what I'm thinking of is Brubaker's Captain America as a way a death was used. Like you knew he was going to come back, but they used the death to mean something. But
I'm just trying to understand are you asking for a standalone issue that's completely void from the story Geoff Johns is telling in all four of these Lantern titles?
Now that would be That would be nice, but I wouldn't expect that. But I would expect something like even a John story that is happening. It's just like it doesn't have to be like so ingrained in the rest of these stories. Like it could be a John story with Hal and Sinister doing something else that doesn't carry over from the previous Green Lantern issue and doesn't lead into the next Green Lantern issue.
When you pick up this annual and say, oh man, this isn't the Green Lantern I've been reading for the last 12 months. I've been reading Green Lantern for an entire year, and now I get nothing.
Well, no, I'd like a Green Lantern story, but I'd like a Green Lantern annual story, not another Green Lantern monthly story.
You remember we did Tales of the Core, and they had, the story, the St. Walker story. I'm just confused as to why you would want something singular like that instead of something big and over the top clearly leads into another big event.
I'd like something big and over the top. That's fine, but first of all, this was the only big and over the top thing in this was the Guardian fight, and that was a couple pages here and there in the middle. And the other thing is that this sure it's big and over the top, but it's big and over the top like in the middle of other things. Like it's like Green Lantern 11, was it 11 or 12? I forget where the numbering is, but it was the previous issue of Green Lantern and then the annual and then zero. I'd like to be able to read this out of order. Like I the fact that it just has to go out of the previous issue and then into the next issue just seems super. It doesn't feel like an annual. It feels like another monthly issue. It feels like it's Green Lantern 12. It just got more pages and was drawn by Ethan Van Sciver.
And I, for one, think that's a great thing.
All right. Well, it's two Easter round. Kulon wanted more to be more an annual feeling book where it was supposed to have a sort of singular story that meant to be more special and more roundabout for itself being the first annual of its kind, rather than being a monthly issue. But Brandon has a fair point. This issue does go over the top. It does give you a crazy story that's supposed to lead you, like supposed to make you want more, which is going to give you more when it goes into the story.
Let's look at the other DC annuals. The Action Comics annual plays right into Grant Morrison's current story. The Flash annual is not even a conclusion to the Flash story they've been telling over 12 years. It's just another issue.
12 years?
Yeah, it's like...
Because I just have to reference it takes me back to the Rebels annual where they use that to expand the backstory of Starro.
Well, that's just not DC anymore. I mean, you look across the board now, and I'm just saying that they all do this. They all use the annuals and probably the zero issues as just another issue.
So if everyone else jumped off a cliff, would you jump off a cliff, Brandon? Huh? Huh, Brandon?
I think you would.
All right, let's move on to Green Lantern number zero, of course, because this is the debut issue of Simon Bass. And well, let's get right into the jump here with the cover itself. You know, all the zero issues covers are, you know, the character breaking through, making a breakaway into the, you know, into the reader's eye. And we see, of course, Simon Bass in his full Green Lantern costume with a gun pointed towards us. And we get into the book itself. And of course, it starts off with an Arab American family watching as 9/11 happened on TV and being reflected in Simon Bass's eyes. And we get to see more and more of Simon Bass's life as he lived, you know, in Dearborn, Michigan. You know, see his life as he lived, seeing that, you know, it was rough growing up during that time, you know, 10-year lifespan, being treated as an outsider. And then we also get right into the story with him stealing a car or stealing a van with an explosive device in it that he had no idea why it was there, which is pretty funny, seeing that, you know, once you get into that car, you can clearly see that thing is huge. That bomb is unmistakably huge, and you can totally tell it was there.
Well, maybe he didn't. He's just lying his ass off.
But, you know.
Oh, yes. So just because he's brown, he's a terrorist, Colton, huh? Is that what you're saying?
No, not at all. I'm just saying he might be a lying bastard.
As, you know, again, the story progresses, he drives the car away from, you know, from a civilian population, you know, allows it to get blown up, and of course he's arrested on site, and where he's eventually interrogated and, you know, pegged as a terrorist. So pretty much how the entire story goes. He's pegged as a terrorist. He tries his best to convince him otherwise, telling him that he had no idea that the bomb was there. He confesses full-heartedly that he is a carjacker, that he's not a good person, but he's not a killer. And eventually, no, of course, the government doesn't believe him, and they were forced to step their attempts higher into trying to make him crack in interrogation. But before they can get further into the interrogation, he tries to make a break for it, and a Green Lantern ring breaks him out of jail. And of course, the first thing that's told, like, that the ring says to him is, Simon Bass of Earth, error, you have the ability to overcome great fear. And of course, the government is completely in shock and awe over this. So the Green Lantern ring breaks this man out of jail. And of course, Amanda Waller is called up out of nowhere. Batman gets a priority call from Cyborg, hearing that a ring broke this guy out of jail. And the last thing we see is Simon Bass in a ditch with a Green Lantern ring on his finger. And of course, you know, we never actually see the costume. But we do get a small aside in knowing what the Arabic Islamic
Arabic writing on his word.
Yeah, Arabic, sorry. The Arabic writing on his forearm is. It's supposed to mean courage. It's never really told us why he wrote it.
Did nobody figure that out yet? Because I was gonna translate it. I was gonna get somebody to translate it for me, but like I just assumed that other people had already figured it out, and I just didn't go through the effort.
Maybe he was originally the Cowardly Lion, and that's the courage he got.
I could see what it said. I just didn't. I just don't understand Arabic. I can read it, but
so that's again. I have no idea. I have no idea if anyone actually translated it at all.
And it's the internet. No,
okay. The internet. Yeah, cool. But awesome. Yeah,
just making sure, because then I would have felt bad that I didn't tell the internet.
Well, yeah, that's the that's Simon Bass's origin story. Calden, what'd you think of it?
Well, it was an origin. I mean, we learned the detailed history of the character, what he had to grow up with, the coincidental circumstances that led to his current point of being arrested and charged with terrorism, only for him to get the Green Lantern power. It's pretty standard. I mean, we got a little bit with Sinestro and Hal, where we're like, where the hell are they? But
I wanted to bring that up later.
Oh, ignoring that and pretending I didn't say it, but basically, it was an acceptable origin. I mean, maybe, you know, making the Arab guy come off as a terrorist was the best idea for writing. I don't know, just kind of offensive. Maybe a little tiny bit, a little smidge. Anyways, other than that little aspect, I think, you know, he seems like he could be an interesting character. We just got to see what he does with the ring.
Brandon?
It wasn't until Kuan accused Colton of siding with terrorists or being racist, whichever he did. that
terror racist.
When I read this issue, it was like, oh, poor guy. And now I'm thinking, maybe he's lying. You know, it never even crossed my mind that Geoff Johns would write the character to be a liar. I mean, it's one thing to be, I don't know, a car thief, and it's another thing to just lie to the feds, you know, when you're in.
Yeah, car thievery, that's okay, but lying.
I mean, if the feds have you in a locked room, you might as well tell the truth, especially if all you did was steal a car. Now, if you are a terrorist and you did, or even if it's just an act of revenge,
you are against, all fucking racists.
No, I'm just trying to paint the picture for
nope,
you, man.
Nope. All I'm hearing is the guy's Arab and he must be a terrorist.
Just you gotta give.
Oh, you racist, Kuhan.
Geoff Johns wants you to believe this guy is innocent, and I'm just saying the evidence says otherwise.
The evidence doesn't say otherwise. He's what? How does the evidence say otherwise?
No.
Because he called his sister. Said I didn't know. He specifically said
his alibi.
Yeah, he called his sister. Said I didn't know. And like, why would he lie to his sister? He's like, I didn't know.
It's an alibi.
What? No, he thought he was gonna die. He thought he was gonna blow up and die. So he called his sister. Said I didn't know. I'm sorry. Here's his stuff.
A terrorist, doesn't it?
He was probably innocent. I was just a joke.
No, nope, you are wrong, Brandon. He specifically.
You don't think any suicide bombers have ever called up their wives and said, "Yo, I'm out"?
No, but he didn't. He didn't say I'm out.
Yo, calm down.
He said I didn't. he said I didn't know. He was like, I didn't know there was a bomb in the back of the truck. I'm sorry.
There's been a few suicide bombers that have gotten cold feet.
There have been a few. But again, Brandon, continue your.
It wasn't that he got cold feet though. It was like he was gonna die, and he called to say like, "I'm sorry, all right. I didn't know. Let's get this stuff."
I think we should let the audience know that Kuhan is a former.
A what?
Like he is a.
How to say this?
My skin is brown. I'm from South Asia. The country I was born in sits next to Afghanistan. There.
He was formerly brown.
Yeah,
you retired?
Okay. Yeah.
Point is that I don't think he's necessarily as innocent as he's making it seem. He may not have known about the bomb.
I think obviously he's a car thief, but I think he's as innocent as he's making it seem. He's guilty of stealing. He's guilty of stealing cars, but not anything else.
Grand Theft Auto.
But let's look at his rationale for stealing the cars. My sister lost her husband, and now she has to take care of her kid on her own. So now you have to steal cars? You can't get a second job, man?
I'm not saying he's not stupid or guilty of stealing cars, just not terrorism.
He's guilty of being stupid.
Where's the money in terrorism?
If he's willing to steal a car, why would you trust anything he says? If you had him in a box for just stealing a car, don't you think he'd lie about it? All right. So if he's the kind of guy
I didn't say anything. He's like, don't you think he'd lie about it? All right. So if he's the kind of guy.
If he's the kind of guy that would lie to the cops, then he's the kind of guy that would lie to the feds if he was actually a terrorist.
Well, so what if he's a terrorist or he's a car thief? I mean, then he gets a character arc and gets to evolve from that. I mean, I think that's compelling.
Yeah, John Stewart's a racist.
That's good. So here's the thing: we're judging the character on one character trait that we've seen, but not the story itself.
So we
just met him.
My problem with the story itself. Well, first of all, the story is about the character. My problems with the story itself are there's two problems. One is that.
11
is that the what?
9/11.
Well, no, that well, yeah. One, okay. So there's three problems. One is that they use 9/11, and it doesn't really like it's just they're like shocked, and they didn't really use it. They just used it for shock value,
like a country song.
The second thing is that the day after 9/11, there was vandalism. Which didn't happen. Not the day after. Like I can see a week after something like that, but like the day after America was united, nobody was.
Wait, did they actually mention 9/11 in the story?
Yes,
they
did.
They
several times.
He was that never happened in the DCU. Like they had the
Oh, in this new continuity, 9/11 happened.
Yeah, new continuity. There were the Twin Towers were smoking and burning in his eyes. So that's the one thing is that they used it for shock value. The other thing is that there was the vandalism the day after. I could see 1 week later, but one day later there was vandalism, and that didn't happen because America was united on September 12th. They were united from September 12th through September 14th, and then September 15th, shoot, kill
everybody
Muslims.
Find out who did it. Then we got all pissed.
Exactly. That's how it worked. And then the last thing is error.
Oh, I am error.
I'm like, just give him the ring. Just give him the ring. Why does it have to be an error? Why? And so, like, I understand giving it to Baz, and I could see a character arc, but the fact that it says error makes it seem like they're setting him up for failure.
He is a failure.
No, that's fine. But no,
he's not supposed to be the ring.
Dude, no, John Stewart was a street tough.
No, it's very
well that the ring has to select him without any error should not be indicative of like, oh, he's half of a lantern. I mean, Kyle wasn't selected by the ring; he's not half of a lantern.
No,
you know what's going on?
No, but well, Kyle was selected. By Guardian.
Gantha just picked some drunk guy wandering out of a bar.
Every lantern.
Well, no, there was more to it than that. I mean, there was the whole prophecy about Kyle would be the one to become Ion to do all this and that. But
right,
anyway.
No, but
every character, even Hal Jordan, has been selected by happenstance. Every single one of them.
Well, that's how the ring worked. The ring is happenstance. Well, no, not necessarily. John and Guy were both selected.
They were happenstance. Like John, what they were selected as replacement lanterns.
Yeah.
John and Guy were played. Like Guy was solely for the sheer fact that he wasn't closest in comparison to Hal. John, just because Hal once met him in a bar at one time. That's like the straight up reasons why these guys got rings.
The ring picked Hal. He just he was closer. That's why it picked him over Guy. And the Guardians picked Guy because he would have been a second choice. John was happenstance, and Kyle was kind of happenstance, but prophecy, whatever. My problem with Baz is that it says error, which just makes it feel like it's like, oh, it's an error that the ring wasn't supposed to pick him, and it seems like it's setting him up for failure because we're at a time that a lot of new characters don't last very long when they're created new. And maybe Baz will last. Maybe he'll be Hal Jordan's partner. But it just feels like they're setting him up to be a failure of a lantern, and that he's not going to be a lantern. That he's going to be somewhat of a he's going to be an asshole, and he's going to lose the ring, or he's going to die, or something. And it feels like we're not supposed to like him. Because
he's not a good guy.
Right, and that's the problem. It feels like you're not supposed to like him, and they're not going to try to make you like him.
Because he's not a good guy.
Right,
it's one issue. He hasn't had a chance to become redeemable.
I'm
not sure about that, only for the sheer fact that how much push this guy's getting behind from everyone in DC. He's already headlining Justice League of America.
Like the smoke hasn't even cleared on his first issue, and the action figure's already like coming out in a couple of months or whatever.
This guy got USA Today behind him.
Well, and I think that
Baz, please.
That all feels like gimmicky, like, oh, he's Arab stuff, but like it feels like they're setting him up for failure. I could be wrong, but like I don't.
I mean, they're clearly setting him up for big things. I think it's going to eventually be like a big Knight's End thing where it's like, oh, what happens when Hal fights Baz, and it'll be this big event. You know,
I think they want him to last.
I'm hoping,
but,
he does.
But
I'm
hoping preparing
he stays,
for failure just
I'm
in
hoping,
case.
I'm hoping he
they're
sticks around because when I grew up, the people who I saw
he's here to stay.
When I grew up, the people I saw on television and in comics were all white dudes and Haji, and Apu, I don't want to be Haji when I grow up.
What about the guy from Shorts? The guy from Short Circuit wasn't bad.
Short Circuit was.
it's a trick question. Dude was white. They gave him like
he was
brown,
a white guy.
They gave him like red face.
My tea was Brazilian.
I don't care. It was awesome. He was funny.
Okay, anyways. You see, yeah, you don't care because you're white and everybody is white.
I don't want to be white.
Whatever. Anyways, I
want to be tan.
And obviously, I guess kids don't read comics, but if Baz like sticks around and he might penetrate, you know, all the Green Lanterns made some. Shut up, Colton. all the Green Lanterns have made some sort of appearance in cartoons now. Like, Guy Gardner was big in Brave and the Bold. Hal Jordan was, you know. So maybe if Baz sticks around, he might penetrate into to the mainstream and that kind of stuff. And kids could see Baz in cartoons on their television. And there could be little brown kids like, oh, I want to be Baz when I grow up. Or Simon, I guess. Simon Baz when I grow up. But I hope that's what I hope. But it just doesn't look like that's happening. That disappoints me. But if it does happen, then I'll be the biggest supporter of Baz. I'll be like, look, he was kind of a dick when he showed up, and now he's not. So was Jon Stewart. Jon Stewart was a huge – Jon Stewart was a racist when he showed up, and now he's Jon Stewart. Guy Gardner was an asshole, and he's still an asshole, but whatever. He's Guy Gardner. People like Guy Gardner. So if Baz sticks around and becomes more of a character and not just like, oh, he's an Arab guy who stole cars, then I'll be excited. And
also, you got all that from Error.
Yes. I did.
Wow, that's ridiculous. Nice analyst there.
That the ski mask and the fact he's a carjacker. But yes, I got all that from Error because it's not you have been selected by the Green Lantern Corps. You've been selected. It's not Baz, Simon Baz. You have the ability to overcome great fear. It's Simon Baz. You, Error, have the ability to overcome great fear. So that's what it feels like.
Reading the annual, you know why it says Error.
Yeah, but
because it's a forged ring. That has just had two completely different people merging together and going off into another.
Right.
It's
also an error. Like maybe the
it's basically one legitimate ring because Sinestro made Hal a ring and then the ring reemerged with it. So
I guess they have conflicted. Remember, they both wanted different types of lanterns, so the message conflicted.
If the ring says error, then what makes it that the ring isn't actually causing an error? Like it just saying error, maybe it actually is an error. Who's to say it's not an error? And the fact, you know, like it's not.
But so what if it is?
I agree. If
he doesn't deserve the lantern or the ring, he doesn't deserve the mask
I would argue that no one deserves that mask.
Let's play devil's advocate and say he doesn't deserve the ring. I mean, I think that makes him more compelling than the character.
That's true. It's very much how Kyle got the ring, and a lot of people that said he didn't deserve the ring because he wasn't chosen by the proper channels.
That's different. That's completely different.
No, it isn't.
Kyle wasn't out there drunk driving. Kyle wasn't out there stealing cars, blowing up automobile factories.
Let's say that he was. I mean, so what? That makes for compelling background.
It does make for compelling background.
It doesn't mean you deserve the ring, and that's all I'm saying.
And even if it doesn't, then so what? I
mean, he can prove that he deserves it through action.
Exactly. I think I
agree with Buzard. Yeah, if the arc. The story arc then becomes like how he makes himself worthy of that ring, and that's his journey from, you know, the next one, you know, 10, 20 issues.
Or he could go on a murdering spree, start terrorizing Oa.
This is true. So he could become the John Paul Valley Azrael Batman. That could be where they're going too. But either way, that's
anyway.
It could be good either way.
And the thing is, I feel like what Brandon's saying is going to happen. And if that happens, then I'm a little disappointed that this is the guy that they decided. Oh, they made a big deal that he's Arab American. They made a big deal that he is and they're going to try to make him a killer. And if that happens, then I'm going to be angry. And if what Colton and Andrew are saying happens, then I'm going to be excited. I'm going to be excited that Baz is going to be redeemed as a character. And if he sticks around as Green Lantern, I'm going to be excited about that. But if what Brandon is saying happens, then I'm going to be super pissed.
Let's say this.
They don't necessarily need to redeem him, per se. I mean, if he's kind of like the somewhat flawed, unrepentant Green Lantern.
Or he proves himself. I can see if he proves himself, he can still be kind of a jerk. That's fine.
Yeah,
but if he goes around on a murdering spree or something, then I'm going to be like, then why did... I'm going to be super pissed.
Kills people, and you don't see me flipping a wig.
No, first of all, John doesn't... There's other black people in comics. You have other role models. I do not. I got one guy.
You've hurt Brandon.
Okay.
I got one guy, man.
All right.
One guy.
So pretty much at the end of the issue itself, the one thing I did want to mention is what Carlton brought up, is that we do get a glimmer as to what Hal and Sinestro are doing. Apparently they're in some negative space where they have no idea where they are. Of course, it's just a black... negative space with white accents, and Sinestro asks Hal Jordan, where are they?
Now, does this look familiar to anybody? Because the space? Is this? Am I supposed to recognize this as a Green Lantern fan?
Oh, probably not. It's just it was just a black negative space. Okay. No idea what it is.
0 hour.
It's 0 hour. You're right. It could be 0 hour. We could see Hal Jordan's parallax somewhere.
Which, just wait. Hal Jordan reveals in the negative space that he's been parallaxed the entire time.
That would be nice. Special thanks to Andrew Modine.
Yeah, exactly. What do you mean? You're not going to get special thanks. And like Jeff's going to be like, oh, man, I had this great idea that Hal's been parallaxed the entire time. And Kyle knows. He told Kyle. There was like this big thing where he told Kyle. Kyle figured it out. But, yeah, it's going to be great. It's going to be awesome.
I made it up all by myself.
All by myself. And then you get a C&D.
At that point, I pretty much have to kill him.
You're going to see the first page, and over there it's going to be written, it's going to be in crayon written by Jeff Johns. It's going to be like a misspelled word or two in there.
And then you get a C&D on your YouTube channel. Like take that down.
Andrew's name is crossed out, and then Jeff Johns' name is written in crayon.
Yes, in crayon, of course.
All right. Well,
smiley face.
It couldn't be any other way.
That was our talk about Green Lantern number 0. Smiley face, crayon, Jeff Johns stealing Andrew's idea.
Middle finger.
Middle finger to the audience. And there it is. Well, hopefully you liked our talks and our rants about, you know, the Green Lantern annual and the Green Lantern number 0. Hopefully you'll be back next time for our you know, in-depth talks on the other 0 issues and, you know, Green Lantern 13 when it finally comes out. When we get a brand new batch of the next future wave of the DC Universe. And we'll get to see what's going to happen to the amazing murder killing spree of Baz and Kuan's slight disappointment in all this. Till then, stay green. Fantastic.
Be sure to check us out at www.thegreenlanterncorps.com.
You can also email us at contact@thegreenlanterncorps.com.
You can follow us on Twitter at @theGLCorps.
And be sure to check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/GLSpotlight.
You can reach our voicemail line at 313-GL1-2814. That's 313-451-2814.
Thanks for listening, and check us out next time, and please stop masturbating when I'm talking to you.
Be sure to check out Kirby Crackle, performers of our opening theme, Ring Capacity, at www.kirbycracklemusic.com. Also check out the Roy Clark Method, performers of our ending theme, Sector 2814, at freeweb.com/Roy Clark Method.
This magic green, it is the color green, it can do anything. Sometimes it speaks to me, it says, how, what have you done with your life? People around you keep dying. Use your will to right the wrong.
Also, Colton, I hate to be that guy, but I'm pretty sure it would be Michael Hyde's name that's crossed out and then Jeff scribbled in crayon.
Hide.
So.
Hide? That's his name? Hide?
Oh, no, that's right. Hida.
Is it Hida?
So how important are you?
It's Hida.
How important
are you?
Hyde?
It's like high definition?
Yeah, high definition. Hida.